this wasteland. I am the one who runs from both the living and the dead. A man reduced to a single instinct. Survive.
Going on, guys. I am Steve, and this is BSR. We are doing another Midnight Movie Club, and I can't be more excited for this one. With me, as always, he truly is the shiny and chrome of BSR. That is Cisco Kid.
Witness me. And this week, as our guest film selector, the very feral road warrior himself, our good friend Casey O'Connor. Welcome to the BSR show.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Welcome. So, Casey, for our audience, first of all, if you can tell, we're doing Mad Max Fury Road, the 2015 insanity action film that probably is the best action film of the last 20 years. Who knows? But Casey, I'm super stoked that you picked this movie. Why'd you pick Mad Max Fury Road out of all the lists we submitted to the names or the movies we submitted to you on the list?
Well, actually, one of the things you just said is part of it. I think it's easily the best movie of the last decade. At least one released by a major studio with like, as far as like blockbuster status goes. There's so much about it to like, and there's so much about it that like, it's just random and shouldn't work, but does. And like, despite that, it utilizes like very traditional conventions and how it's made, it breaks all those and like does super creative things within those all at the same time as well. It's very much a vision of like an amazing filmmaker, and it's just so fun to watch. It's so over the top. It's so big. It's great.
What's your first memory of seeing this movie?
So I don't know if you guys know this, but your guest tonight,
I know
actually,
this story
is actually integral. Excuse me, played an integral part in how Warner Brothers decided to release this film.
Oh, really?
Yes, because the survey I filled out at the test screening at the AMC Burbank 16.
Can you
was
explain?
All, well, was all taken very seriously, and it was all there on the screen.
Well, can you explain to our audience who isn't so lucky to live in Los Angeles and every other movie theater has a bunch of guys standing out front saying, do you want to see a movie that's not finished yet? Can you explain what a test screening is?
So basically what happens is studio wants to see how the audience is going to enjoy a picture. So what they'll do is they'll do these test screenings and their marketing screenings, and it's like basically come see a free movie, you know, before everybody else, blah, blah, blah. And like most of the time they'll tell you what it is and give you a brief description, but sometimes they'll be like, it's a major blockbuster and we can't tell you. And so people are like, oh, I definitely want to go see that then. And so what they do is they basically gather audience reaction. They try to set a certain demographic, like invite only certain people within a certain age and so forth. And basically show them the movie in some rough cut version, like maybe not all the effects are done, or, you know, it's not going to be the final version. Maybe you'll see stuff that doesn't get in the final release or whatever. And then they make you fill out a survey at the end asking your opinions on certain things and whatnot. And then they gather that all up and go over it with the director and like, you know, you got to trim this or you got to add that and blah, blah, blah.
What was the difference in time between when you saw this for the test screening versus when
I'm pretty out? Sure it was almost like a year to the day.
Really? So you saw this movie almost a year in
advance. I saw this movie a year in advance. And the thing was, it wasn't in that rough a state at that point either. It was pretty much what was released.
So
I got to say, let me just interject really quickly. So I was working with Casey during this time, and I remember him coming back to the office from seeing that screening and being like, I can't even describe to you what I just watched. When this movie comes out, get into a theater and watch it. And I remember being like, wait, what? And he started breaking it down to me, telling me what it was. And I was like, are you serious? Because I think at that point we had a trailer, maybe like a teaser trailer already. So it wasn't like a shock that Fury Road was coming out. So I think we had some idea, but the way that Casey was talking about it, I was just like, Casey is not easily impressed by movies. Let me just, I'll say that as a friend.
Oh, and, I don't know. I like some fucking stinkers. That's
No. But you like movies, but you're also, you view things with a critical eye. And so you can't, you know, you can be critical of stuff. And I appreciate that, obviously, because him and I have talked about movies a lot. And I remember having him come back and be like super, super excited about it. And I was like, okay, I'm already excited for it at this point. And then, you know, obviously went on to go see it and all that. But yeah, dude, I just remember being very impressed by how impressed Casey was by it.
Oh, it knocked. I wasn't expecting it to be as good as it was. Like I was like, this could be cool. But I'm like, George Miller always kind of, you know, makes Mad Max movies interesting when he does one. But I'm like, I go, it's going to be hard to top the Road Warrior, man. Like the Road Warrior is like, you know, pretty baller. Like, I don't know how you go bigger than that. And dude, he did it like on such an epic level. And so, yeah, you know, a year before I see this thing and like fill out the survey, and it looked like the main thing they were trying to figure out from what was in the survey was, should we do this R or PG-13?
Really?
Yeah. And so thankfully the version I saw, because I read something else too, where they, I guess there was actually test screenings where these people had to see a PG-13 version of this movie.
Oh,
and really? I was just like, God, can you imagine being a Mad Max fan and like that's the screening you get stuck with? Yeah. Like how horrible would that be? And so thankfully I saw pretty much what got released. Like I don't remember any scenes or any like footage that was drastically different than what was the final version. And so yeah, on this survey they're like, you know, do you think, you know, do you like this as, you know, as the version you saw, or do you think it should be like, you know, more, you know, like a PG-13 version? And I just got like super dramatic on the paper. I was like, don't you fucking dare make this movie PG-13. Like I go, you know, despite any like pro-feminism thing it's got going on, you need to strap the biggest, hairiest sack you fucking can on this thing. Like, don't even mute it. Like, it's beautiful. Like, just let it go. Like, do it, you know?
Oh, man. Well, with that being said, what do you guys say? Should we just get into this conversation? Let's do it. All right. I'm so pumped. Let's do it. This is Midnight Movie Club, Mad Max, Fury Road. All right, here we are. It's Mad Max Fury Road. All right, you've told us the first time that you saw this movie, Casey. Cisco, what was your first experience when you saw this movie?
Went to go see it in the theater with my wife, and she didn't know what to expect. She had never seen a Mad Max movie before. It had been a really long time since I had seen one, so was coming in pretty fresh, but I was pretty excited. You know, like I said, Casey had hyped it up for me, like a year prior. So up until release date, we hadn't really talked about it much, although I think I talked to him about it. Like, I was going to go see it that weekend. I was pretty stoked. And went to go see it in a Dolby theater in an AMC, which is, I would say, my favorite way of watching this movie. And I got to just put this out there, man. If you are listening to this podcast and you haven't seen Fury Road yet, I have to say that, unfortunately, you missed your opportunity to watch it the best way possible, which is in a theater. So if it ever comes back for an anniversary or for any kind of celebration, get your ass to a theater. Watch this shit on the biggest, loudest screen you can, because it, watching it at home is cool, but it will not give you the same kind of excitement that you will get in a theater. I promise you.
I had this thought right before we were starting today. I went, this type of movie, this movie itself, are the reason movie theaters will never actually fully close. Like,
yeah, agreed.
This is a movie that will play at midnight or whatever in theaters forever. Like, this is a movie meant it sucks because today that gets thrown around very easily, in my opinion. Sort of, you need to go see this in the movie theater. It's a movie theater movie. But no, Mad Max Fury Road is a fucking movie theater movie. I saw this movie for the first time by myself opening night at the Cinerama Dome, I believe.
That's a good way to do it, too.
And yeah, I walked out of it and holy shit. it was one of those cases where I'm not going to make plans with anybody. Nobody's going to ruin this for me. I just go by myself. It's kind of like every once a year or so, it's like going to church for me. And yeah, totally. I sit where I want to sit. I get the food I want to eat. I don't have to worry about anybody. I make sure there's space between me and anybody around me. And I get lost and I was not prepared. I was not expecting, you know, what is my relationship with the originals, if I'm being fully honest, is I remember watching Mad Max on in the summertime. It just was one of those movies I feel like was on cable all the time, and just being like, what the even as a little kid, being like, what the fuck is this shit? This is so weird, but I can't turn away. And then I remember Road Warrior being introduced to me later on. But the one that always sticks out to me because of, you know, my age at the time is Thunderdome, which it's only till now that I've come to understand that it's a low point in the franchise, I guess, for some.
But it's probably, you know, out of the four, it's probably the lowest one, but there's still really cool, interesting stuff going on in Thunderdome that I could still watch it and be entertained.
But I feel like Thunderdome was always referenced in other things in pop culture out of the Mad Max world.
Yeah.
I mean, Mad Max is the earliest inception of Thunderdome. I mean, if there was one before that, I don't know what it is, but.
Well, I think because Thunderdome was, when it came out, it was sort of indicative of the time, right? Which was sort of over the top. And it had
Tina Turner in a music video.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it had some of the
clearly
commercial trappings of a big movie like that. And then it wasn't obviously it wasn't as good as Road Warrior, and
it's PG-13, right?
And it's PG-13.
So, you know, I think that, you know, it was one of those ones that like you would see in like Mad Magazine. It was like getting made fun of, you know, and it was sort of like a joke back then, or like a meme would be now. It became, but like Casey said, like, it was the first one I ever saw. You know, I saw Thunderdome before I saw the original Mad Max or Road Warrior. And I remember being like a kid and thinking, this is pretty cool. Like, I didn't know any better. You know, I just was like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah. Like it was definitely the first one I saw. And I got exposed to Road Warrior maybe probably like after I was like age 18. Like I didn't see Road Warrior for the first time for like many years after its release. And then once I saw that, I was like, oh my God, like, yeah, this is the deal, you know? And then, the original, like I saw once when I was really young, and thought it was kind of cool. And then I've probably only seen the first Mad Max maybe like two or three times in my lifetime.
So
I kind of feel the same way about the original Mad Max as I do about the original Evil Dead, which is like, it's good, you know, but it's not like the sequel is better.
Yeah, no, the same. Like Evil Dead 1, I've seen, you know, even though I own all those and love all those, like I've probably seen the first Evil Dead maybe like four or five times. And Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, I've seen like, I can't even count how many times. So
I'm putting that.
I mean, 2 is basically a remake of the first one, just, you know,
exactly
better.
Yeah. So. But like, and like way funnier. You know, it's, it has that, like, it has the sense of humor that the first one doesn't really have.
Right.
Which like I actually really enjoy. And so, I mean, I think that, and I agree with Casey, like my experience with the Mad Max franchise is very similar. Like, I think, I'm almost positive I'm positive I watched Thunderdome first, and then I'm almost positive that I saw 2 next, which again later on, like not right away or anything. And then as in a like way later, watched the original Mad Max and was like, oh yeah, like it's all right. It's not like I get it. But you know what it is? Is like it's definitely a product of like being a small budget, being old, and
it's,
know,
like,
it's being like the first
to drop another one. It's like El Mariachi, you know. It's
yes
it's, yeah, it's sure. There's a seed of an idea there. There's it's very low budget, but I'm oddly like can't turn it off.
Yes,
you know what I mean. And so
yeah,
so with that, with sort of your, you know, I don't want to say expectations, but in that mindset, when you hear that they're making a new Mad Max, you hear that Mel Gibson's not coming back. I mean, we don't have to get into that. We all know why he's not coming back.
Right.
But with that being said, and you hear they're going to do it, but George Miller's back, like, is there trepidation? Is there excitement? Are you hyped for it? Or are you just sort of like, let's just see you roll the dice?
Me, as a pretty avid film watcher, like, I'm always skeptical when something that's kind of like an old product is trying to get rebooted or refreshed in some kind of new way. Because I'm always mostly, you know, like, just go watch the shit that was good again. And then like, go make something new. If that inspires you, go make something new from that. Like, it doesn't have to have the same name or be part of the same thing. So I was a little trepidatious about it, but you know, I did have faith since it was him. I'm like, okay, it'll probably be at least interesting. And also the fact that like he tried forever to get it made too. And so it was like, so he's got to have some idea that he's like really wants to get out there. And like, just the universe was just not letting it happen for so many years. Like, they tried to shoot this movie so many times. Like, they were going to shoot it in, I think, like New South Wales at some point or something. And then like the weather there, it like rained for the first time in forever. Like the location they were going to shoot at. So that messed that whole thing up and delayed that.
I think I read he was planning on originally making this movie in like early 2000s and with Mel Gibson, actually.
And with Mel Gibson.
And then 9/11 happened. And then after that, the US dollar, you know, it's been quoted everywhere. The US dollar was not doing that great. Followed by, and so they halted off on for a while, and he went and made Happy Feet, and I think like Babe 2 or something, and then you know, they got it up and going again. And I can remember like even more years before it came out, I can remember seeing on like the local news he was doing all kinds of press and all like from Australia, and showing off like the cars that he's already paid to have built. And like, it was just this thing that was like, damn. And then like, you just didn't hear about it forever. You just
knew. That was in like 2005. He was supposed to do it again. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they and also
the thing too, is like, this movie was filmed like in 2012 and 2013. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, it was even like 2 years after they were done, like with the production, that it even got released. So,
right.
And like I said, when I saw it a year earlier, it was pretty much done. So I don't really know why they waited so long, but I mean, but yeah, it took forever for him to do another one. So, so I kept that in mind when I came into it, but I did have skepticism for sure.
What about you, Cisco? Were you excited for it? Were you trepidatious?
I think a little unsure as well, you know, and when I was first hearing the rumblings about it, this is pre obviously Casey going to the screening and talking about it, but I kind of feel the same way. I was more of the like, man, his last three movies have been like Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2 and a Babe movie. And I think he's in like his mid late 70s now. I'm like, how is he going to make this movie? Right. And then there's no Mel Gibson. And, you know, I didn't know anything. I didn't know, like, was Tom Hardy supposed to be Max? Like, what was going on with this movie? You know, I didn't have any clue what was going on. But then obviously that changed when my buddy was like, it looks cool. Then I see the trailer and I'm like, oh, this looks pretty crazy. And then you start hearing all of the stories during the promotion of the movie, right? Which is like, oh, we shot so much of this practically, and you know, a lot of this, there's hardly any special effect or CGI in the movie at all. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool, because like I'm seeing something on screen that's like looks like it's a lot of digital effects, and then hearing that, I'm like, oh, that could be pretty cool. And then you know, we got to go see it.
So in my rewatch today, I watch this movie probably twice a year, I think, at least. And every time I watch it, I say to myself, I should watch this more often. But I have a huge 4K OLED, you know, crazy television. No movie looks better on my television than this.
And I can imagine.
At the same time, there's something about, you know, Richard Donner passed away this week. And yes. There was something I kept finding myself in watching this in this rewatch today. Because I watched it actually twice. I watched it yesterday and I watched it today. Was because so much of it is done practically. I think I read like 90% of it is practically. It looks so good. And I don't mean this to say that it looks dated, but it has moments in it that almost like the way it's shot, the way it's lit, because of the way they did it practically, where it reminds me of those movies in the 80s and 90s that were done practically before CGI.
And yeah, it fits into the world of the other ones, I think, quite well, despite the time difference.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of why.
Yeah. And, you know, I 100% agree. I think that one of the big keys to the success of this movie is the way that it looks, you know, like how he shot it. Even though he shot it digitally, he's doing some really interesting things with angles and
camera movement. It's always
camera
moving.
Movement. And the speed, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff in the, like the very beginning of the movie, like it's like the first 30 minutes where it feels like it's running like time and a half, you know, like a lot of the, when Max is kind of trying to escape the war boys at the very beginning, it feels like everything's really sped up, and you know, that adds to the energy of the movie, I think, in a big way. And then, you know, obviously, like all of the stuff that, you know, building those cars, you know, having those real vehicles existing in the desert and seeing them function, it immerses you in the movie in the way that like you just don't get in other movies. As much as I love a lot of the other stuff, you don't get, I think, as emotionally connected to it as you would in a movie like this.
Yeah. I mean, I love how kinetic this movie is. It's just constantly just on the move. And one of the things I think that's masterful about it is that he's able to like just visually like tell the story and develop characters like with very minimal dialogue. And like, while they're like, you know, while bikers are throwing grenades at him on top of a truck, you know, all this crazy stuff's happening around him. And there's like just so much that's being developed and like so much you're getting told while all this crazy stuff is going on. It's just amazing. It's just so fun to watch.
I think he said somewhere I saw today, because I watched a bunch of old interviews, or not old, but, you know, 2015. I think he said that there's a cut every 2 seconds and like 4 frames.
Damn.
Wow.
The one thing about the editing I did read that I thought was crazy was the editor had something like 470 hours of footage.
Yeah, it took her, like 4 months just to watch it.
Yeah, it took her 3 months to watch everything.
Yeah, yeah. And it's his wife.
And it's his wife. That's right. And I was just like, damn.
Yeah, I watched at the con. Speaking of which, con is happening right now. But I was I watched the old con presser right after the movie premiered. And they ask about, you know, why did he choose his wife? And he's like, you know, at the end of the day, if I had hired like this guy or that guy or this guy, it would look like everything that's already, every action movie that's already out there. He's like, and you know, she's never gets bored at anything. And I know that, or she gets bored easily or something. And I know that she would cut it in a way that would make this movie unlike any other action movie that's out there. And look, proofs in the pudding. She fucking won the Oscar.
Yeah.
The Oscar, like, yeah. That, well deserved.
That panned out perfectly.
So,
and I love the female presence in this movie too, by the way.
Now, were you guys expecting it when you went into the movie?
No, especially me seeing it a year before without any press or anything. I was just like, oh, I know Charlize Theron's in it, but like, I didn't know like what capacity or anything.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, after coming out of it, I was like, wow, that's like really cool. You know, like it's this movie that's going to just be appealing to everybody and like still has this like, you know, very empowering, like, you know, female, you know, message and stuff going on too. And so he actually consulted Eve Ensler, the writer of the Vagina Monologues.
Right.
Like she came down to the set for a week and like, you know, discussed.
Workshopped.
Did this whole workshop with them.
I think she had been doing like some kind of charity work or something in the area or in the region.
She was in Africa, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So they brought her down.
That's quite the coincidence, but
yeah.
Man. I did not expect that. I same thing. I knew obviously that Charlize Theron was in it, but I didn't know to what capacity or anything. And man, like I love that the movie is about her, that it's her story.
Yeah, and, for sure. And it's way more engrossing than like anything that's ever going on with Max. Cause like as cool as Max is, I mean, you pretty much already know what's going on with him. And even, right. I mean, even more so if you've never even seen the movies, it's like all that flashback stuff is like really early on in this film. It's like, it pretty much catches you up like as far as you need to go.
I thought it was really inventive to sort of, and I read that this was sort of purpose, but that Max is just sort of the audience's sort of eyes or avatar into the world. Sort of
pretty
thing.
Much.
And it's just sort of him coming in, but he's trying to do his own thing and just experiencing this, you know, the situation at hand.
That's a pretty neat trick from a filmmaker, you know, to like basically Trojan horse us into this story without us expecting it through like a somewhat familiar character, which is
right.
It's just genius, man.
Yeah. I didn't know. I went into it and very quickly I realized like, oh shit. I was like, this isn't Mad Max's movie. This is Charlize Theron's character's movie. Like, and I walked out of the movie just like, wow. Like that was like, not just on a technical level, but just sort of the nuance and the subtext of the movie. And the fact that he pulled it off with a incredible female protagonist.
Yeah. I mean, this movie, part of the reason I love it too, is like, there's really not an aspect or a department that like fails in this movie. There's not like, oh, the action's cool, but the story, you know, like, you know, sometimes that happens. It's like, no, everything about this movie, like, is just
firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, it literally is. It's and on nitro.
Yeah. Like, yeah, for real.
It's just perfect.
So
the makeup is all amazing. The stunt work is
incredible. There's not a slip in it. And it's a, you know, when you want to boil it down, it's a pretty simplistic story. You know,
it's so just, simple.
It's basically just a a road chase movie for, you know, 2 hours. Mm-hmm. But there's so much that happens within that, and so much that he is able to like, you know, give the audience and portray and like show you, that it's just so impressive.
Perfect example. My wife comes in today while I'm watching it, while I'm taking my lunch. She's like, "What are you watching?" And I was like, "Oh, Fury Road." She's like, "Mad Max." I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "Ah, this movie's so weird." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "I don't like it." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "It's all about like feminism, and it's like an incredible female like lead, like action star. Like, what are you talking about?" She was just like, "Just because it's got feminist undertones doesn't mean I have to like it." And I was like, "Okay." And then literally, she just sits down. Literally, I'm not joking. Within 5 seconds, puts her phone down and is watching the fucking movie.
Did she watch the whole thing with you?
No, she had to get on a Zoom call for work. But like, yeah. come on.
Yeah,
Casey, did you watch the movie with your wife at the screening as well? Or only
no, she actually couldn't make the screening because she still had to be at work. Because with those screenings, you have to get there like crazy early, like 2 hours early. Like I had to leave work early. I told our boss, I'm like, "Look, I know this isn't very professional, but I fucking have to leave work. Like, I cannot miss this opportunity."
I think when I first moved to LA for the first couple of years, when I was fairly unemployed, like all I did was go to movie like test screenings.
Yeah, especially when I was unemployed, I was all about it. But like, you know, at this time I was working, and I was like, "Oh man."
So then, when the movie actually did release, I'm guessing that you guys went together to watch it in the theater.
Yeah, I definitely made sure that we saw it in IMAX. I don't know if I saw it in 3D the initial time, but I definitely think I saw it in 3D at one point too.
What did she think? What was her reaction?
She loved it. She thinks it's great. She watched it with me last night as well. And you know, action stuff, you know, she doesn't like everything I do. Like I'm more forgivable of like, you know, B stuff and like, you know, 80s canon movies. Like I love that stuff. She likes some of it, but most of the time she's like, "I don't want to watch that." You know?
Yeah.
Like,
totally. Yeah.
I'm like, "But it's Invasion USA, you know?" And so, but for the most part, she likes action movies for the reasons I do and sees like the silly fun in them. And so we had a good time watching it.
I think that's one of the really telling things about this kind of movie is that like, not just the dudes that are the movies sort of like intended for are going to enjoy it, but everybody's going to end up digging it because it's not just a simple action movie, right? It's not Fast and the Furious, right? Like Fast and the Furious, you know what you're getting into when you go to go see that, and you're sort of like prepared to enjoy it for what it is. And this one, even if you're dragging your significant other to go see it, and it's not necessarily wouldn't be their cup of tea, like Casey said, there's something for everyone, and it just hooks. It hooks you, man. It hooks you, whether it's Max's story or the action, or you know, once you start seeing Furiosa start kicking ass, you're invested, and then it's hard to, and it's such an adrenaline rush. Like the first 30 minutes are just nonstop.
The moment that fucking the camera pans back to the fucking car and Max. And just Max is just standing there, just looking fucking so cool.
With his long
hair.
And
then the little lizard comes up, and then he,
with
his heel, and like, it's just, we're off. From the moment he snaps that lizard and eats it and looks at the what's coming, it's we're off to the races.
The one thing I remember, like, regarding the pace of this movie was when I saw that in the first initial screening, was the whole basically like first act chase where it kind of concludes in the storm, like the dirt storm or whatever. Uh-huh. And then like, you got to realize, I didn't time it exactly, but that whole sequence is probably what, at least like 10 to 15 minutes long or something.
It's
like, it just
long,
goes on forever. And like, finally, like when the storm part like stops and if the movie kind of finally fades out and like gives you a pause so you can breathe, like, everybody just erupted into applause because they were just like, "I can't believe I just saw that." Number one, and two, it was just like, "Oh, we can breathe again," because I think our mouths were just like, just open, and I'm like, "I'm still here."
He does do some pretty smart things when it comes to the pacing, where it's like you have these super intense long drawn out things. Like, you know, I in particular, like, was so impressed by the very, very beginning of the movie. So like at literally at 30 minutes, I paused it because it was right before he wakes up in the desert. It's like as the flare is going out, that's right. Exactly 30 minutes.
Yeah. That's the point where everybody's just like, so fucking, into applause.
The whole movie up until that point was nonstop. Like from the minute the movie starts, and he's getting chased, and all of this shit is going nuts. I mean, he's in the fucking Citadel. He's getting his blood drawn. Then they're on a fucking crazy chase. It's just nuts. And it's like, okay, 30 minutes, and finally we can, like Casey said, we can finally breathe and like take everything in that we just saw.
He definitely does that a couple of times, I feel like, and it's splitting things up. Because
was just the first time.
That's just the first time. But he uses that, I feel like, at least two more times throughout the movie.
Well, because there's two other big chases.
Right.
There's the middle one, which is when they're getting chased through the canyon.
Right.
And then there's the final one.
So
I also love that there's like those basically the moments where they shoot off the fireworks that kind of signify each of when these each moments are going to kickstart too. It's like, it's Miller telling you like, all right, strap on, here we go again. You know?
Yeah.
So which of the three chases are your guys' favorite?
Oh, Casey, you go first.
Mine is the first one where it concludes with the storm, man. Like probably because, like I said, that experience I had with it was really cool. And it's just, there's so much going on. I mean, there's so much going on in all the chases, but like, there's just so much flying at them. And then like when they begin of the storm and it just gets even crazier, like it's just awesome. It's great.
It's a tough choice for me between the first and the last one.
Yeah.
But I think I'm leaning towards the last one right now, 'cause I just finished watching it. And man, when there's so much happening, there's like, the guys in the poles coming down and grabbing them, and
for sure,
and Max is like flying around, and Furiosa gets stabbed, and people are getting shot. It's like, dude, it is absolutely bonkers, crazy, and I get like, I get so into it when that final chase is happening. I love it so much that I think I'm slightly leaning in that direction. How about you, Steve-O?
Makes it so hard because I love the first one, I love the last one, and then the second one, like I like the canyon one too though.
When
the guys come down
on the
there's
dirt,
not a bad frame in this movie.
Well, that's like, the thing is his framing is so fucking just incredible. And I gotta tell you, I think it has to do with the fact that he essentially didn't write a script for it. He paid storyboard artists and made I think there's like over 3,000 storyboards,
3,500 storyboards, and five different artists. And one of the artists, I think it's Brendan McCarthy, got screenwriting credit because he basically, from what I read, created like all the cars and like a lot of characters and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's amazing. You know, it's like,
well,
I know there's not going to be a lot of dialogue, but I want to have all this crazy action in, and I want people, and I want to be able to portray like how I want it shot. And also to sell the studio too, I assume, you know, like this is what I want to do. Well, right here,
apparently, if you take all 3,500 of these storyboard shots, it's the entire movie that we got, apparently.
Yeah, from what the making of I saw on the disc last night, he said he's like basically about 80% of the storyboards were what was actually on screen.
And it sounds to me like, because you know, there's I sent it to Cisco earlier, I'd forgotten about it, but you know, in May of 2020, when we were sort of in the first several, our first stint of quarantine, New York Times posted that oral history.
Yeah.
That was just like crazy. And I told myself to make sure I read that before the show tonight, because I remember it being really like being good. And I was like halfway through it and stopped, and I had to send it to Cisco and be like, fuck, I forgot about how good this article was.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, you don't, and listen, we did a whole month of Marvel, and I'm not trying to dog on Marvel. It's just because Marvel's the biggest one for me to say. But, you know, we did Jaws recently, and we did some other ones where there's so much written about in the history of them, obviously, but there's this whole like sort of struggle to get them made, and the production and what goes on behind the scenes to get them made that, you know, and granted, I'm sure it's because it's a tight corporate ship over there, but like, you don't really hear too much about that, about like how they, what they went through to get done on like a Marvel movie or even a Fast and the Furious movie now, right? And I think that the reason why this movie is so good, and I'm going to compare it to like Jaws and those movies that were, because we're going to revisit this movie forever, as far as I'm concerned, it's going to stand the test of the time, is because this is a movie in the classic sense that, like, even though it's big budget, even though it's a major studio, all these things, like, it's still, it did things that practical way, that sort of old school way, and they went through the elements. The stuff where Hardy obviously was so, and he's open about it. He's like, I just didn't understand because we didn't have a fucking script. In fact, even in the, like, the con presser, you know, he says, you know, when they asked him about the script, and he was like, oh, that would have been fucking nice if we actually had a script, you know? And then he, you know, he's famously quoted from this press conference for halfway through it, basically going, listen, I got to apologize because
I didn't know.
And I didn't understand. And I got extremely frustrated on set. And like, I took it
and
out.
I think Charlize also, sure, kind of, well, it comes out to the same extent, but she says the same thing.
But I think her side of it comes out more from the oral history. And wasn't widely reported other than the two of them apparently had clashed.
Didn't get
that Tom Hardy and Charlize said, but not that Charlize was also going, what the fuck are we doing here?
Yeah,
with George, you know, and getting frustrated with that. But it's like they're spending 9 months out in the fucking desert, and that shit that we're seeing on screen is what they're living in for 9 months. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, and how many studio execs are going out into the middle of that desert to, like,
you know, and that's a whole other
survey.
That's a whole other podcast series about what was going on at Warner Brothers on the executive level at that time and who was trying to vie for spots. We'll save that for the next, you know, version of Entourage. But
well, I guess that's, you know, that's a testament to what the auteur aspect of what George Miller does in this movie, right? Which is like, he has a vision, and even if the people on screen aren't fully invested or don't fully get it, he's able to pull something out of them to basically give us the movie that we got, and to make them, you know, in retrospect, go back and be like, I was wrong. I didn't get it. And now when I get to see this masterpiece on screen, right, I understand
because
what he was thinking.
They fucking knew that moment. That was going to be the fucking clip that plays in their fucking in memoriam or whatever, in memorandum at the fucking Oscars.
Right. Yeah.
It ain't going to be the fucking whatever Keanu movie. It ain't going to be Chain Reaction for Charlize, let me tell you. Yeah. It might be Monster,
but still,
but why would they do
Furiosa
that to her?
If you know what, if George Miller comes through on Furiosa in 2023 and really like solidifies that character as like something, I mean, she's already like a character that is in the world, but, yeah, and that people love, but man, if they do something with that movie, I'm excited for that. Just the idea of a prequel about her.
So Hemsworth is supposed to be in it. He's in it.
Okay.
Question. If this movie gets delayed, if Fury Road was to get delayed longer and not have gotten made in 2015 and gotten made in, say, 2020, 2021, is Hemsworth Max?
I still want Hardy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's a good question.
I think Hardy's just crazy enough.
I got to tell you, I'm smitten with fucking Hardy in this movie.
I am
smitten with him in a way that I have not been smitten with a lead action hero in a movie since Harrison Ford. Like, there's something about this dude. Like, the moment, like, when he's, the moment he says basically goodbye to the pregnant one.
I can't remember her
name. Basically, and then she, like, you know, she essentially gets killed.
He gives her the thumbs up.
But he kind of just gives her he has these moments. And at the end, it's the same thing at the very end, the last shot of him in the crowd at the Citadel when he looks up at Charlize or whatever, right? It's just, he has this perfect, just, it's not over the top
demeanor.
It's just like everything about him is like confident, but cool. But like, I don't know. I'm smitten with fucking Tom Hardy.
Yeah. And I think he also he's a very unique, performer in a lot of different ways. It's not just the sort of like the mannerisms that he does, which are obviously like the, you know, a lot of the, he gets a lot of shit for the the way that he delivers lines and stuff like that, where it's like you can't really understand him. It's a lot of grunting and, like, you know, it's this.
Well, Dark Knight, that was Nolan's fault.
But in this movie, he's the same way.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, granted, he only had, like, I think 52 lines or something.
Sure. And for movie, like, probably a good, like, third of the movie, he's got a giant muzzle, a giant metal muzzle on his face. So,
which just really quick, which is also amazing. It's like, how ballsy is it to, like, strap a face mask on, like, your main dude for, yeah, like, the first third of the movie, and then, yeah, you're spending like $150 million on this movie?
What about him doing it back to back?
Right. Yeah.
With fucking Bane,
him making the choice, like, to do it back to back.
Exactly.
Yeah. Going, fuck it. Yeah, I can do it.
He's like, you know, I really liked having that muzzle on me in Mad Max. Let's do it again.
So
maybe that's why Warner Bros. Is like, well, it worked the first time. Let's go with it.
But no, I was going to say that he also does some really cool things physically. You know, so, like, a lot of the ways that he, like, the stunts that he's doing, you know, a lot of the running and the tackling that he does, or the fights, it's all very, like, I can't imagine anyone else doing it as good as him.
Yeah, and as far as, like, him versus Hemsworth, like, I just think Hardy's just scrappier. He's more,
that's
like,
exactly what it is.
He's more fucking street than, like,
he's John McClane.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
He's got that McClane. Yeah, he's got that McClane sort of thing where it's like, he's not this ripped out crazy, but he is if you watch, what is that movie, Fighter? Did you ever watch that one with him?
Oh,
Egerton?
Warrior.
Warrior. Yeah. Like, that Warrior, was, like, yeah, he's fucking, like, yeah, he's scrappier. Now let's get to Charlize. I know we kind of talked about how cool it is in the prequel and whatnot, but I got to tell you, this, like, I always liked Charlize Theron, but
her stock rose with this movie.
She definitely, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, this, and then, like, also I got to say, Atomic Blonde, like, you know, her action, like, roles during this time period are just awesome, and she's just all in on it, and you could tell, like, she's, yeah, just totally all about it. And then, you know, and then mix that with just the dramatics that's happening with her character in the movie, and, like I said, you know, in the midst of everything that's going on, she's still able to convey all that. It's just, it's such an impressive performance.
There's a scene in this movie that, if you've seen it, you probably know what I'm about to say, but in lesser hands with a different director, with a different actress, comes off so cheesy and so,
could you imagine? Could you imagine Anne Hathaway doing it?
Yeah, right. So, like, the moment when she
fucking
finds
Amy
out that
Adams.
Dude, the moment when she finds out that her home is gone, and she's in the sand dune and it's blowing by her, and she falls to her knees. She drops her arm, falls to her knees, and then she screams. That, I can see that it could be, like, you know, the worst version of that is Darth
Michael
Vader's
Bay.
No, right? Which is, like, you don't want to see that. But her version is so fucking good. It's beautiful. The way that they shoot it is really beautiful. The craziness of the sand dunes blowing by her looks awesome. She looks like she's just, like, going through it.
Yeah, it's genuine, man, compared to, like, how it could have been portrayed otherwise.
Right.
And I also had that same reaction when I walked out of the theater after the test screening and realized I couldn't talk about it for a year with anybody. Yeah. I just dropped to my knees and was like, no!
Oh, my God. No, it's funny because in watching it today, I went, I want that in, like, a very professionally printed, glossy, I want that frame in, like, a big, like, you know, like those old, like, I used to have on my wall, like, the cliche, like, big ass Reservoir Dog Tony,
like,
Montana Scarface, like, just what, like, it just, it's just a wall, like,
I was gonna say,
poster, yeah, like,
one
huge
of you guys has to know, like, has Gallery 88 ever done, like, an artistic version,
sure,
of that
have
print somewhere, because I want it.
I want to, I don't know about that particular one, but I want to say I went to a Mad Max art show at Creature Features when that was still in Burbank. They're not around anymore, but they did one and it was pretty cool. But yeah, that frame where she's on her knees and, like, the sand's blowing and everything, like, do you remember Maxell Blank cassettes, like, back in the 80s?
Yeah.
Like, it reminds me of like that stupid thing with the guy at the wind blowing in the chair for some stupid reason. I don't know why. Yeah,
my brother had that poster on his wall.
Yeah, it looks like
is it Magnavox? Something that
could be on your wall.
And it's iconic. Yeah.
All right. Now, Nicholas Holt.
Very good. Another person I think whose stock went up in this movie too.
I've liked a lot of the things that he's done, and you know, it took me a while to recognize that that's who he was. Because you know, he's a very handsome dude. He, you know, the stuff that he's done before, you know, you're used to seeing him. And I actually this role and him in Warm Bodies are two that like are sort of like left field for him, and both performances that I really dig.
Yeah, I think the thing about it is with this entire cast is everybody's making choices, and they're all everybody's pot committed, and that's true for every department in this movie. Like every department, and like let's we've gushed for 50 minutes, almost 51 minutes about this movie. Is there anything, you know, we don't want to get negative or anything, but is there anything that like you don't like about this movie? Is there anything that you're like, they just like, we're at like 99.9%. It's just that one little, is there anything?
Honestly, for me, no. And that's actually part of why I picked it. Like I put this film in such high regard because I don't have a moment with it. Like, I think everything is just executed like in such as close to perfect a way as possible that like, it just works on all levels. And it's really hard for me to find something negative about it. I mean, I think the worst thing I can say about it is maybe there's times where you don't hear dialogue because there's a bunch of crazy shit happening or something.
That's why you got to watch that shit with the captions on at home. Come on, man.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's not even to a point where it's like, oh, I need to rewind it because I don't know what the hell's happening or anything.
There's
it's
no way like, I'm getting through however
goddamn. It's just part of the craziness, you know?
Like, yeah, well, there's no way I'm getting through fucking however goddamn many seasons of Game of Thrones without the captions on.
The only negative that I have about this movie is that there isn't more of it. I could have watched 4 hours of this.
Okay. I'm going to be the petty bitch. My only issue, and it was my issue when I watched it in theaters, and it's still my issue today, I don't like the CGI parts of the movie. Like, I don't like the big storm.
Ah, okay.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I mean, I get it. That's definitely like the most CGI, like, I think, scene in the movie.
I don't think that looks as good on your home TV as it did in the theater.
Probably.
Like, I remember in the theater being like, that looks really good. And then at home being like, the warts are showing a little bit on some of the special effects, some of the CGI effects. Like the storm itself looks really good to me, but some of the bodies flying look like a little cartoony.
And
so I can see that.
Yeah.
The flame coming out of the Doof Warriors guitar.
I love that.
Oh no, the concept and the way it looks is cool, but you could definitely tell it's like a CGI flamethrower.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
They had a real flamethrower in that thing.
No, but in
that storm, and that's why I think it's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're excited for the Furiosa prequel.
Oh, after Fury Road, like as long as Miller's involved, I'm definitely all in.
Yep.
And because it's been what now? 6 years since Fury Road, which seems crazy to me. It doesn't even seem like it's been that long.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely all in. I'm more excited for Furiosa, I think, than I was for Fury Road, you know.
Yeah, because of Fury Road, right?
Like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What do we think about Anya Taylor-Joy taking on the role?
I really liked her in The Queen's Gambit. I think she could do it. I think she'll bring something interesting to it for sure.
So it's not Charlize?
No, it's a prequel.
I know it's a prequel, but it's like a really young version of her then.
It's like a 20 something, yeah. Yeah, it's a 20 something thing. In fact, Charlize actually a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago gave a quote about it, basically saying that she's kind of heartbroken about it, but that, you know, she has nothing but the utmost faith in George and all of that. There's some people on the internet that want to be like, it's because George was like, fuck all you bitches bitching and complaining on my shit for 9 months. I told you this shit was going to be a masterpiece.
That's his pettiness showing.
He's like, fuck y'all. Maybe. I'm gonna go torture new people for fucking 10 months.
And can we just bring up the fact that like George Miller is in his 70s?
Yeah.
And like he's making films that like whip the ass of like filmmakers half his age.
Well, oh man, well, when they talk about what he was going through during that production, sounded nuts.
Oh yeah.
Like he barely survived it.
Yeah, it's like he's going through these like rigorous shoots for like months at a time, you know.
And then having to deal with a studio who was like trying to, you know, give him shit for being, well, he was over budget, obviously, and like he was taking way longer. He was over schedule.
Yeah, and so you know, the fact that he's, you know, as old as he is and like is still cranking out these just awesome fucking amazing movies is just so impressive. Yeah. And the other thing about the budget too is like this movie, I think, was like $150 million budget. And for after like advertising and everything, after the box office grosses, it still lost somewhere between like 20 and 40 million. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's considered a flop. But I will say there's a quote in the New York Times, and I'll put a link in the show notes that pops up for you guys when you're listening to this. You can click on it, you can read it. There's a quote, though, that stood out to me as to why this movie's so great. And the fact of the matter is that even though, yeah, it lost money and it won a bunch of awards, can anyone tell me, first of all, what won Best Picture in 2015 without looking it up?
Only because I looked it up yesterday.
You son of a bitch. You've proven my point, no, but what was it? What won in 2015?
It was Spotlight.
Yeah.
Which is actually a movie me and my wife watch a frequent amount.
It's a good movie.
I like Spotlight. Come on.
It's not the classic that like, Fury Road
but,
is.
But Spotlight, let's fucking be honest. Spotlight should be a fucking 9-10 episode fucking HBO limited series. Like,
yeah, no, for sure.
Come on.
Like, as good as Spotlight is for what it is, it's not Fury Road. Fury Road is such... I mean, it already is, I think, but it's such a timeless, classic, fucking big, huge blockbuster action film.
Well, and this is...
And it's definitely going to get rewatched by more people than Spotlight.
I mean, God, I was watching...
In other countries other than this, too.
Part of the reason why I was so excited to talk about it and rewatch it today was there was a period of time where it was on either HBO or Showtime or something for, like, nonstop. And I feel like I was watching this movie probably at least twice a week during that time. Like I would turn it on. I don't care if it was in the beginning, middle, or end, and I'd watch it all the way through. And I'd be up late at night watching it. And I just like, I couldn't stop. So I've watched this movie probably in some form, maybe not completely, but probably like at least 20 times, maybe more.
So
like just a shit ton of times. Cause I Casey likes to watch stuff, I think, on like physical disc, and I do too, but if it's on a premium cable channel and I'm scrolling through the menu and I see Mad Max Fury Road, I'm like, we're watching this, and I pop it on.
I'm just too lazy to go put my physical media in, even though I have them all.
Yeah I
still love it, man. It's still the best way.
I just buy it all still over again and over again and over again and over again. But the thing about this movie is no matter it being a flop, no matter it didn't win Best Picture,
it will endure forever.
And that's the thing. And there's this quote from one of the guys in the oral history that says, you know, we didn't win the Oscar or whatever, but we had a lovely guy in England come up to us and say, I voted for you guys, and I'll tell you why. I look at a film and I think in 20 years time, will I remember that film? And in 20 years, I will remember Fury Road.
Yeah, okay? For sure.
Go ahead.
And that happens a lot with, like, I think Best Picture winners lately, like, especially in the past, like, 20 years. It's like, some are very justified. And it's not even the fact that, like, the movie's bad that ends up winning. But rewatchability is a very big thing for me.
Yeah, I ain't like, rewatching really... Crash, motherfuckers.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't want to watch it again after I saw it the first time. Still shocked to this day that even got the prize. But... Yeah, I mean, I think a Best Picture should be like, you know, it should be classic. It's going to be something that you're going to want to keep on watching. And it's hard to determine, like, you know, that movie could very well be something like Moonlight or Spotlight or, you know, something more independent as opposed to like a big action movie.
Oh,
but,
sure.
But for the most part, most people just want escapism and they're going to go revisit Mad Max more so than those most likely.
That's just it. This is like escapism done like in a non-pandering way and in a smart way.
And in a memorable way, right? That's the biggest thing. There's a lot of escapism that you're like, that was fun. I don't have to ever watch that again. It was cool. It wasn't a waste of money. I enjoyed myself while I was there. But this one is one that's like, I can't wait to watch this again.
Yeah. And for as much in it, as much of what's in it that appeals to everyone, you know, like big explosions, big stunts or whatever, it's like, the things about it that aren't conventional are what are fascinating to me as well is like his color palette on this movie. Mm-hmm. It's like the apocalypse has not looked so beautiful in any other film.
I'm telling you, fucking the fact that this movie took as long as it did to finally get made from his first initial thought, it only benefited.
It's like it was just the crock pot like made it. Like taste better, like it just they just let it simmer and it just kept getting more flavorful.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think Steve brought up something earlier that made a lot of sense when we were talking about Jaws. Is that, you know, like one of the things that applies to both these movies is that the tribulations that both movies face being made added to what make it so good, right? So like whether or not it made a lot of money is irrelevant. Like the quality of the film is a testament to the struggle that it was to make it, you know, and that shows in what we get to see on screen.
Yeah, and the quality that was able to be presented in the course of, you know, the struggles that, you know, the people making the movie had, you know.
Well, if there's one thing I hope that comes out of the pandemic and COVID and whatnot in regards to movies is I hope it's allowed movies to sit and get reworked and get, you know, just had some time to just sort of sit and percolate a little bit more. And I hope the benefit will be better movies that we're going to start getting.
I definitely agree. I think too many movie qualities suffer because they're trying to reach a certain like release date and, you know, it's all just way too choreographed beforehand. And it's just like, you know what, schedule a shoot, you know, budget a certain length of shoot and just let them do their thing. And then like when they're comfortable with what they've done in post, then start discussing when you're going to throw it out there. Mm-hmm. Like I get trying to beat other studios to things and all that kind of stuff, but it's sometimes it's just going to be a hindrance on like the product.
Right.
So Casey, not only are you a big avid movie fan, but we actually met at like Designer Con.
This is correct.
A couple years ago.
2019.
Damn. That's a while ago. that's right. We lost the whole year.
Yeah.
Can you tell the folks at home a little bit about why you had a booth there?
So me and my friend Shane Merrill, we have a company called Voltage VHS, and what we do is we repurpose old VHS tapes and we turn them into functional LED lamps. And we also do very like customized things with them. We can do sound bites. We can do, you know, certain color patterns and, you know, motion patterns and so forth. We've done motion sensor. We do Bluetooth app control stuff. And so, basically try to come up with concepts based on the movie. And then we also have like just general products across the board that anyone can get.
So I actually, Casey was kind enough to make me a custom Gleaming the Cube one, which is rad with all the cool old era appropriate skate brand stickers on the inside of
we stickered on the inside.
it's awesome. I know Alex has a Back to the Future one that's rad. If the people want to check out your Voltage tapes, where can they find you?
So we have our website, which is voltagevhs.com. We have stuff for sale on through the website. Right now we're currently doing free shipping on everything. I don't know if it's officially on the site because the site's a little rough because it's just the two of us, but we do offer a year warranty on anything. If there's any issues or anything, we'll totally fix it. But we haven't had any issues yet. I've had people that have had these lamps for at least 3 years since we started. And I check up with them too, in case they're like, you know, too modest to tell me it's a piece of shit or anything. And they're like, no, man, it still works great. Like, I've never had any issue with it. So I'm like, all right, good.
Well,
so yeah, we've over the pandemic, we bought a bunch of tapes because everybody was just like sitting around cleaning out their houses. And so, like, you know, Facebook Marketplace was just like a free for all for VHS. And so, like, we hit it hard, man. And so we've got a lot of stock and a pretty big variety. So if you're interested in anything, please contact us. We're also on Instagram at Voltage VHS Lamps, and you can see a lot of videos on there of like some of the custom work we do as well. And then at Voltage VHS on Twitter and Facebook.
Well, I gotta say, they definitely need to go check you out. If you guys are a fan of the Midnight Movie Club, you should definitely check out Casey's Voltage Lamps. They're fucking rad. Dude, thank you so much for picking Fury Road. I feel like I could have talked, I could and could still talk about it for a whole nother hour. I feel like we didn't even really get into so much of it, but I really, I gotta say, I really enjoyed doing this episode with you. If the folks at home want to follow you personally, where can they find you?
You can find me at Pop Culture Casey on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
And Cisco Kid, where could the people find you?
Cisco Kid with 2D77 on Instagram and Twitter.
And you can find me, I'm Stephen Ellis, at Rex Manning on Twitter. And I don't know if I'm under Rex Manning or under Stephen Ellis on Letterboxd, but come check me out on Letterboxd. And that's it this week on BSR. Later.
What's up, guys? I'm here at Pixar. I'm about to go in, start working on a collaboration project with Pixar. Just kidding, man. I don't play that soft little baby shit, man. That's Satan all day, that evil Satan stuff, heavy metal shit, man. I don't fuck around with little baby shit like that.